Ralph Barbieri and Tom Tolbert. Welcoming to the show Steve Kevin. I remember Steve when he was writing for the Chronicle many, many years ago. He has now penned One Day at Fenway, A Day in the Life of Baseball in America. Steve, I've heard a lot about the book, and first of all, thanks for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure, Ralph.
Pretty good people you got on the jacket too. Billy Beane said some nice things about the book. Bruce Jenkins,
Lee Monfil, Fenway Experience. Yeah, so I don't know. I was awfully happy to see that. I don't know why they were saying such nice things.
Well, talk about what spawned the idea.
Well, you know, all those years that you were talking about, it wasn't that many years ago, but it was a few when I was covering the A's for the Chronicle from 94 to 98. You know, you're out there every day, and you guys probably have the same kinds of frustrations. You can only do so much in the block of time that you have. And as a writer, you know, for the newspaper, you only get so many inches, you know, and you got to do certain things. So you're always kind of hemmed in, you know. And I tried to have fun with the form as much as I could when I was writing for the Chronicle. I even mentioned Zed from Pulp Fiction in a lead one time. I don't know if you remember that one, but
I do.
you know, there's only so much you can do. So I thought, what if you could do a whole book about one game and just try to get as many facets of it as you can and put it all in there by following different people around for the day. In this case, I had more than a dozen reporters with different people.
Whose chopper is that? It's Zed's chopper. Who's Zed? Zed's dead, baby. Zed's dead. Gotta love Zed.
Exactly.
Hey, you just, Steve, what was it like? I mean, I've always wanted to go. I've never been to Fenway. That's one place I desperately want to get to. And I did get a chance to see the Red Sox and Yankees play at Yankee Stadium.
Tom said he won't go unless he can sit on the monster.
Well, I do want to sit on the monster, but it's kind of a nondescript game. The Yankees won 11-1, and it was a day game in Yankee Stadium. I didn't feel like I got the full flavor, the full intensity of the rivalry. I mean, what was it like just being back there? Because, I mean, I love the Giants and the Dodgers when they play, and growing up an Angels fan, I enjoy the Angels and the A's, but nothing compares to this rivalry, which each game seems like it's a playoff-type game.
Well, absolutely. I grew up with the Giant-Dodger rivalry. You know, that was what formed my ideas of what a great rivalry was. And I love that rivalry, and, they're different. And I think a big factor in what makes the Red Sox-Yankee rivalry so special is the fact that, you know, let's face it, you've had a lot of good books written about these rivalries. And, you know, it gives people, you could, like in the off season, instead of kind of shutting down, you know, and not thinking about it anymore, people dig into these big books that have been written. I mean, Roger Angel, who I've had the pleasure of working with on his last book, has written great stuff. And Dan Shaughnessy, so much stuff. And then, of course, the history. You know, I don't know. I think for all of us, Babe Ruth is like it's like the dinosaurs or something. It seems so far away, but yet it's still vivid, and it has a hold on our imagination. So the fact that the Yankee Red Sox rivalry, at least until the Sox win it again, connects to the Babe and the whole idea of the curse and all the stories, I think that just gives it an extra layer of fascination.
Talking to Steve Kevin here on KMBR, I know I saw somewhere where you had mentioned, I mean, it was a unique concept, and I think, you know, a very compelling one. And you have all these people following all these other people, and I know you thought, hey, what if this game sucks?
Yeah, exactly.
You had everything arranged.
Yeah, I mean, what if, you know, someone, the pitcher gets hurt, you know, he's got a toenail problem or, a fingernail or a blister or something, he's gone, bam, 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 it's 11-1, like Tom was just talking about. And I've spent 2 months putting together the team, including having a reporter in South Korea with the high school coach of Young Kim. I had one there, and I had one in the Dominican Republic with Rafael Avila, the scout who basically signed Pedro Martinez and worked with him when he was a teenager, you know, a skinny little kid running around following his big brother Ramon. So, I mean, I had put all this into it, and that's the way it works. You know, that's why we're all interested in sports, because you never know what you're going to get. And, like, I could have got a stinker of a game, in which case I would probably have had to just start all over again and do something this year.
Talking to Steve Kevin here on KMBR, author of One Day at Fenway. Is there anything like the electricity? It seems like, Steve, that one game kind of encapsulates the Red Sox problems with the Yankees, if that's the proper wording, over the last decade or eight, maybe. Get out to a huge lead. Crowd's going wild. We're back in this thing. You fall behind. Oh, my God. Here come the Yankees. Hey, we're back in it again. We're going to win it. Oh, no, we're not.
Yeah, exactly. It was almost eerie the way that it well, recapitulated, if I can use that word.
Please do.
You know, but, yeah, just the, in the eighth inning of the game that I write about in the book, Mariano Rivera came out, and, you know, I have Brian Cashman sitting there in the stands and, you know, basically swearing under his breath because all season long they tried to set things up so that they didn't need Mariano until the ninth. But here he was in the eighth, came out, and he was throwing hard, really hard, and his cutter was really live, and, you know, it was nasty, nasty, but he couldn't find the zone, so he ended up walking in a run. You know, and there was this crazy electricity at Fenway, and they cut it to a one-run game, knowing that they still had the ninth to work with,
mm-hmm.
and knowing that they'd already got to Mariano, and then out comes Byung-Young Kim, and boom, hangs the slider immediately. Jorge Posada deposits into the seats in center field, and there you go, that's the end of it. So it does seem to be how it always goes for the Sox, although I don't know what you two have been saying, but this does look kind of like a different Sox team this year. What have you been saying?
Well, it was funny because I told Ralph a couple weeks ago, if you completely strip away the uniforms and you look at the way they've been playing and the form of the pitchers and the bullpen and the hitting, you would say the Red Sox are a better team and you would say the Red Sox have a great chance to win that division and maybe do something in the playoffs. Then you put the uniforms back on, you say, how can it end any other way than it always does?
Exactly. That's the beauty of it all, because the two things collide.
Well, you know, the one thing that a number of people have mentioned is, how can you have this great rivalry when it's basically one team that's winning all the time? And the other thing, and this is that seems to be fairly obvious, the other thing that I may be a little more subtle, and this is just Tom and I have characterized it this way, and I'm interested in your point of view, the Cub fans just seem like the lovable losers. But the Red Sox fans always seem to have an edge, and they always seem to be angry, and there's just more angst associated with the Red Sox than with the Cubs for some reason. That's just our point of view. Maybe because they've had a better club, you know, for the last many years than the Cubs have.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, but I agree. I mean, you sit at Wrigley and great, great ballpark, and you have to have a good time sitting there. But it's more fun. It's almost laid back in some ways compared to Fenway, where you get that real edge, the sense that people really care. I mean, I think that partly comes from the sense of people passing it on from generation to generation. You know, Peter Farrelly, one of the Farrelly brothers who did There's Something About Mary,
mm-hmm.
The two brothers, Bobby and Peter, were at Ted Williams' last game when they were just little, little tight. Their dad, Doc Farrelly, brought them to that game. You know, the one that Updike wrote about so memorably.
They were at Jim Belushi's house in Martha's Vineyard on the 4th of July, he wrote too, huh?
Yeah, yeah. And then he was at the game that I wrote about, Peter Farrelly, with his son, Bob, taking him to his first game at Fenway. And I do a lot in the book with the way that Peter Farrelly kind of wrestles with whether or not to, like, pass on being a fan to the next generation. Is it a curse? You know, is that really the curse? That your dad gave it to you and your granddad gave it to your dad? I mean, I think that's where it really gets interesting.
Hey Steve, what did you come away with in terms of Theo Epstein? What were your... Because I've heard all kinds of things about him. We've never spoken to him at all.
Oh, you should definitely get him on. I could mention it to the Sox if you like, but he's fascinating. I mean, I had some fun with him as a character. I talk about how, you know, when I didn't put this in the book, but when he was 10 years old, he was a huge Pearl Jam fan, just huge. And, it ended up later on that Eddie Vedder became kind of a Theo fan. And I talked to Vedder in Seattle at a Sox game, because, you know, he was out on the infield. And, he told me about Theo Epstein, that he said something like, you know, he's got a lot of gears in there and you can see them all working together. And I think that's a really good description of Theo, because he tries very hard to be controlled. And I had fun with that in the book, where, you know, there'd be a home run and every single person at Fenway Park stands up except Theo Epstein, who sits in his seat, arms folded over his chest, and then kind of ducks his head just to the right so he can glance between two other fans, you know. He tries really hard to be controlled, kind of almost a mask of unconcern. And you know he's seething underneath, but I don't know, I think he's had a very good year as a GM. I think obviously, in hindsight or retrospect, it's easy to say that moving Nomar was a good move, but I think that took some guts at the time, given the way that Red Sox fans could freak out in about 2 days if it didn't work out.
Hey, let me just, yeah, we got to go. Let me just ask you real quickly, though. Guys like Epstein and Paul DePodesta, I mean, here, brilliant guys, Harvard guys, Ivy League educated guys. Does intelligence go as far in baseball as it does in other areas of life or in other areas of the business community? Because, you know, baseball seems like such a unique entity, you know, unto itself that, you know, I'm not sure that if somebody's a genius, a lot of times they can overthink things, or a lot of times it doesn't necessarily make him a better judge of talent. I mean, what do you think?
Well, real quickly, Bill Walsh, you know, was always talked about as a genius, and I think in football, brain power translates more directly to success. I think in baseball, it's very helpful, and Theo talks about numbers and all that stuff. He says it's a lens. And there are other lenses that you use as well, like character, chemistry in the clubhouse, how the team fits together, things like that. And I think that if you overly intellectualize it, it's dangerous in baseball. I mean, it's a 162-game season. It's a sport that has a tradition of people spending a lot of time together, talking a lot. And there's just so much downtime compared to, you know, hoops, for example, when Tom was just, you know, there wasn't that much time where you spend around the other guys. But in baseball, you spend so much time that you really are, you know, you're stuck with each other. And if guys don't like each other or they just have big differences, I think that really does weigh a team down. And if you overly intellectualize it and just look at numbers or on-base percentage or whatever, I think that's, that can be dangerous.
Hey, Steve, thanks very much for spending the time. Congratulations on the rave reviews the book has been getting. It's certainly, as I said, a unique concept and very compelling, not only just for Yankee and Red Sox fans, but for all baseball fans. One Day at Fenway, A Day in the Life of Baseball in America by Steve Kevin. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Take care. Steve Kevin here on KMBR, the sports leader.
The Razor and Mr. T on KNBR 680.